Hey folks, Paddy here, and thank you again, and as always, for downloading the It's Not All About Me podcast, a podcast featuring a guy with ME and a mic, and that's me, Paddy. So, as promised last week, this week I'm going to share with you a chat that I had whenever I visited with ME Support Northern Ireland during ME Awareness Week. A couple of weeks ago now. It's a support group. I think the first support group that I came across whenever I first got ME. I don't get out to the meetings myself that often because I'm just not an evening guy, unfortunately. But anytime I have dropped by to see them, they've been super warm and welcoming, as you'll be able to tell from this chat coming up. They We're going to, in lieu of having a big event, as Antoinette will be sharing in this chat, in lieu of having a big event for ME Awareness Week, as they have done the last few years, they decided to put their money and their time and effort into really souping up, and relaunching their website. Or I should say launching. I'm not sure if they even had a website before. So they put their money, time, and effort into a website instead, so they could actually reach people beyond the one day or the 1 week of Awareness Week, which I think is a really awesome idea, you know, because it does in the end, you know, that's sustained work apart from the intense work of putting on a conference or a viewing of unrest in 1 day. So I think that was really neat. The website is MESupportNI.com. It's in the show notes. We'll talk about it in the chat. If you live in Northern Ireland, or maybe if you're just curious, I highly recommend checking it out. You'll hear from the chat all the amazing things these people do, which, like a lot of these amazing organizations that we come across, started off was fueled by one family's desperation to need to do something whenever a loved one got ill with ME. So yeah, it was super awesome to visit with them, and their chat's coming up. I don't think there's really too much I want to talk about before we go into the chat. It's, what day is today? Wednesday. So that's Wednesday, and this is coming out then on Monday. It's a beautiful day today, so I'm feeling pretty good myself, you know. I had a bit of a illness. Again, it's funny whenever you get ill, but it's not ME ill. It's weird. Again, I was saying to Maggie, whenever I started feeling ill, I was like, oh, geez, I really hope it's a bad flu. Isn't that funny? Whenever you'd think, oh, fingers crossed, this is a bad flu. So it's a beautiful sunny day now, and I'm feeling pretty good today, I've got to say. I'm feeling pretty good. Lot to be grateful for. I was speaking to your friend who was reminding me the other day about the importance of gratitude, and I think I try to practice gratitude in my life, but it's really cool whenever a friend comes along who's maybe just on their own, you know, personal journey of you know, enrichment, and they remind you of something that you may have let slip. You know, you've maybe dropped from things because you were too busy or too tired or just, you know, got by without it. So it's been really nice to revisit some meditation that I'd let slip, and to start practicing a bit more focused gratitude. So which isn't, you know, as you can imagine, and as you well know, it's not easy when you've got ME to always be grateful. And, you know, I'm not saying I am always grateful, but I'm practicing gratitude and remembering to practice gratitude. So, you know, that's something to be grateful for. Self-fulfilling. There you go. Yeah, so, and I did something crazy yesterday. I bought a treadmill for the house. I was getting very worried about my health, my inability really to leave the house without Maggie at the moment. And the fact that I must spend 9 to 10 hours, at least, more like 12 probably, a day on the sofa. So I was very much worrying about my health. So I bought a treadmill. No idea where I'm going to put it or how I'm going to get it up the stairs, because I understand now, you know, I bought it and then looked at the measurements and it's blooming huge. But I'm thinking kind of, you know, I have ran in the past, as regular listeners might know, you know, I have been a runner, but not forever, not for a long time. So I'm not talking about even couch to 5K or anything this time. I'm talking about a very gentle walk, a very gentle stroll, because it's more than I'm getting now. It wasn't cheap, the treadmill, but I keep thinking that if there's something that might do me good health-wise, then it has to be prioritized. You know, obviously there's the same worries from, you know, we're a one income family now, so you know, there's the worry of, well, is it a waste of money? Will you actually use it? How many people have dusty treadmills somewhere in their house, or rowing machines, or, you know, all these kind of things? I really hope I do. That's all I can say, but I'm not gonna let that question stop me putting my health first. If there's even a tiny chance that this might improve things slightly, I think it's always worth trying. I will let you know how the treadmill goes when it arrives. It should arrive, well, I should have it up and running before whenever you're listening to this. So next week, I'll let you know how the treadmill goes. I'm kind of excited about it. The idea of just a gentle stroll without the worry of going out, because the thing with going out is many times I've been either crashing or close to crashing when outside. So there is a psychological element to this, an emotional element, where, you know, back in the day, I think one of the major indicators that I had a serious illness was that I used to be somewhere for a work meeting in say Oxford in England, and the train would be maybe 10 minutes away. I would live a, you know, an expensive but a doable taxi ride away, but I would crash so bad that I would have to sit down on a bench in the middle of town, call Maggie, and wait. I once waited 3.5 hours on a bench for her to come pick me up, because I couldn't process getting a train or a bus home or a taxi home. Outside is not, I don't feel confident about going outside. And I think that is, obviously it's psychological, but it's also obviously incredibly physical too, because the reality is I could have a crash. That is very much a reality now, you know. If I'm out with Maggie for a 20 minute walk, I will start getting dizzy of head and need to, you know, write off the rest of the day. So I'm hoping in the safety of my own home, I can maybe do a bit of strolling and at least then feel a little bit better that I'm getting some kind of physical exercise. I can put on Netflix or even play Nintendo Switch, or I might even try recording a show while strolling on my treadmill. I don't know how loud it's going to be though. That might not be possible. I could edit the show certainly while strolling. That'll be my, what's that, standing desk. It'd be like my standing desk or walking desk, which is even better than a standing desk, isn't it, I suppose? Anyway, that's been my kind of highlight of the week. The sun is shining, the birds are tweeting, the cats are bathing in the sun, and I've bought a treadmill. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a pretty good week so far. I obviously hope you can say the same. But we'll move straight into the chat with Anne and Antoinette from ME Support Northern Ireland. And then I'll catch up with you on the other side. Enjoy my chat. Anne, Antoinette, how are you doing?
Hiya, Paddy.
Yeah, good.
So tell me, where are we tonight?
We're in the Beach Lawns Hotel in Dunmurry Lane, carrying out our ME Support group meeting.
And you, Antoinette, you are the...
I'm the chairperson of ME Support Northern Ireland.
And how long has it been going for?
It's going now. My son David took ill in 2004, and my sister and I, Jeanette, started doing fundraisers around that time to try and raise money for ME research. We became constituted in 2013, 6 years ago, basically. Just when David was so ill, he was severely affected, and we just went, something good has to come out of this. So we've now started doing like home visits and stuff for kids who are left the way David was many years ago. And this is now 2019, and these things are still happening, where young ones are still bedbound.
That's a heck of a thing. Back in 2004, to find out your son David had this illness, but then to take it on yourselves, to go out there, to raise funding because you realised there wasn't enough research being done. That's a heck of a thing to take on yourselves.
It was, but at the same time when David was diagnosed, he was 11 and basically got a diagnosis of ME, and we were told just to take him home. There was nothing they could do for him.
And there was no services at all, sure there wasn't?
There was nothing.
There was nothing for
nothing,
him?
Nothing, nothing.
So but you did get a diagnosis
at
that
time? He got a diagnosis by a paediatric.
And then just, because this is, we've talked about this on the show a few times, where it's so odd with this illness, where no matter how bad a diagnosis is, having a name for something, having a label for something, it's usually actually the jumping off point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you're like, now I know the enemy, I can attack it now, or I can at least work with it. You can tell me more. Now you've told me what it is, tell me what to do about it. But that just doesn't happen, does it?
I just remember, and I always go back to this wee story when I'm talking. When David got a diagnosis, I had to make 2 car journeys to the hospital, the Royal Victoria Hospital, and people didn't see that. I had to physically lift him into a car to transfer him into my dad's car to get him into the appointment. And when he got a diagnosis that day, I carried him back out to the car, and we get into the car and my dad says, have they found anything out? And bear in mind, my daddy's 79 now, so 2004, what are we talking?
Yeah.
That's 14 years ago.
Yeah, so my daddy was in his late 60s or whatever. He says, oh my God, I'm delighted that he's got a diagnosis.
Right.
I'll talk to you when we get into the house. So we got to my dad's house. My dad and myself lifted Dave up, got him under the settee, and my daddy caught me into the kitchen. And he goes, so what did they find out? I says, he's got ME. And he goes, thanks be to God, what are they going to do for him?
Wow.
And he says, there's nothing they can do. That was it. My dad broke. And that's then.
Yeah.
That's then. That's like 15 years ago now.
And it still yes. hasn't changed.
And that still hasn't changed to this day. So that gave us the power then to start raising money for research. Because we didn't know where to go.
Yeah. So where do you even begin, though? I mean, it blows me away that you did this. Because today we are sitting here, 14 years later, in a hotel on a Tuesday night in the middle of ME Awareness Week. And there's banners at the front of the room that say ME Support Northern Ireland. There's contact numbers and everything. We've got to hear. But starting off, how does one even say, I'm going to raise money for research? I mean, how do you start that?
We found out through Google, whatever, there was researchers in Dundee, and he originally lived in Belfast, and it was Van Spence, and we contacted him. Now, come back then, we had a wee family name, and our wee charity for my sister and I was called Family Fights for Me. And it's lovely. It was lovely because that's what we were doing. We were fighting for ME.
Yeah.
And for your family.
Yeah, for our family member who had 2 brothers. And they lost him. They lost him for 5 years. This is a story that I always talk about, and I still would get emotional to this day, 15 years later, as a mum. And the 2 older brothers, there wasn't much between them all, they lost their wee brother. And he was like a jiu-jitsu champion. He took the national championships in 2003, and he was bedbound in 2005. He got his 11 plus, he got into grammar school. And he got 6 months in grammar school, and he was bedbound from then until the age of 17.
One, I think this morning, in preparing for this chat, I read one of the most heartbreaking examples of what this illness can do in an interview that you've done previously, where you said that your son said to you, when's Mother's Day? and you had to tell him, oh, you've missed it. For some reason, that really struck home with me, yeah. That we hear when we talk about the millions missing and missing out on life, but there's something just incredible about that. You've missed it. It's passed you by, and it just made me think of how many people out there are things are just passing by like that.
When I reflect back, I don't know how David's here, on how much he's missed out on his childhood.
Yes.
My mum took Alzheimer's. God bless her, no longer with me. But my mum always referred to wee David. How's wee David? Every time I went into the house, how's wee David? Is he up yet? Is he doing any better? And she continued to say that until her death. She lost her grandson. Basically, that's what I'm saying. So there's a lot of loss, which you're saying about the missing millions.
Yeah.
People lose everything through their whole family. The two brothers lost their wee brother.
Yeah.
The mummy and daddy lost their son, even though we were his carers 24/7.
And tell me a bit about that, because I think one of my intentions in starting this show was to have, to really seek out and invite people on, not just who have the illness, but who live with someone living with the illness. That's why deliberately my first guest on the show was my wife, Maggie, who you know. I think it's really important to hear their story as well. How has this affected you and your husband?
Oh, I think today this is still affecting me. I still have a lot of guilt, and I don't know why.
Guilt?
Yeah, guilt as a mom, I couldn't make my son better. And he was bedbound. We were spoon-feeding him yogurts. We were lifting him in and out of the bathroom. Cutting his hair 1 week, we only got part of a cut, and maybe 2 or 3 weeks down the line got the other part of his hair cut.
Good
and Lord. These are true stories. So we lose that family holidays. We couldn't go. We couldn't leave David behind and take the other two boys away. Mm-hmm. So you lose all that. And it is a heartbreaking story, but there's so many stories are they're exactly the way David's is.
Yep. Can I speak?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I think that when we're talking about loss and being a sufferer of ME for 35 years, that the real loss is by the person who's actually suffering from ME. It is a horrendous, cruel illness. And as a mother of four, I had periods of my life when I was bedbound. I was unable to be a mother. I was unable to function. I had a team of carers coming into the house to do the sort of basic tasks with me, to get me to the loo, to feed me. And as a mother lying in that darkened room and knowing that I couldn't get up and look after my kids was the most horrendous, awful situation to be in. And then, as well as that, the doctor would come in and say, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. And you lie there and you think, Jesus, how long am I going to be lying here? When is this going to end? Is it going to end? And it is just, even my marriage took a toll on that, because my husband found it very difficult to look at me, a very sort of previously a very active, lively person. And there I was just lying like a bloody vegetable in the bed. It's just the loss is untold and needs to be told.
Absolutely. And you're sitting here today, you're attending this meeting, you play a role for ME Support Northern Ireland. What's got you through? Well, because I spoke last week, I had the author KT King on the show, and she talked in a very real way about saying whenever you're in the situation that you just described, there are some pretty dark thoughts come into your head.
Oh, absolutely.
So why are you still, what's brought you through to sitting here today and being able to be here still with us?
Yes, ME has brought me to very, very dark places. At times I didn't want to waken up the next morning. But I just kept thinking in my head, you've got through this before, you will get through it again. And I think it's really down to the human spirit. And my GP did come in and he did give me antidepressants, which I took. And I think that they sort of maintained my mood. And really from that, I had to relearn how to sit up in bed. One day it was for maybe 5 minutes. The next day I couldn't do it at all. The next day then I would try it for maybe 10. And so that was basically my life for 5-6 years. And that is how I paced myself, and I just very gradually regained a bit of strength mentally and physically. And when I saw that improvement, that kept me going until I got to this point.
I think that's you know, and it's wonderful to see you sitting up and able to help other people now, yeah, who feel the same way or in that position. That one of the hardest things I think that I've come across so far is the patience required. You talked about pacing yourself, and I'm still discovering that it is far less than I think I've got.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you have to be so more. I don't have the capacity of patience, yeah, that I know is required, and the inconsistency. Because you said, yeah, I can sit up for 5 minutes today. Yeah. That doesn't, yeah, mean I can sit up for 5 minutes tomorrow.
It's enough to drive you absolutely mad. I'm not a patient person by nature. I'm usually sort of very active, full of go, wanting to do this, that, the other. But by God, I have learned how to be patient and to let the world go by and just to focus on yourself, to get yourself through.
Yeah, absolutely. I can identify. It's difficult, though, isn't
it? I always do remember when I was lying in very, very dark places, thinking to myself, in my previous life, I was a physical disability social worker. And I used to lie and think, I would love somebody to be able to come in here and say to me, I've been there. Mm. And this is what you do. This is what you've got to do, Anne. And I thought, if I ever regain enough strength, that I will become involved. And that is what I've done now with ME Support Northern Ireland.
And what is the role that you're currently performing for ME Support Northern Ireland?
I provide help with all benefit forms. I also arrange care packages. I also contact GPs, consultants. I write support letters. And I do think it has made a big difference to a lot of people and a lot of sufferers and their families and carers.
Oh, you bet your bottom dollar it has, because I think that is one of the hardest things. The processes required is something I have found incredibly difficult. You ask somebody who has an illness, which means you've got a terrible lack of focus, lack of concentration, inability to process things a lot of the time, form filling, you know,
yeah,
it's absolutely, it's the bane of my life.
Well,
you know?
I think for me that it was something that I had done previously.
Yeah.
I pace myself. I know exactly what to put on those forms. I know the lingo to use. And I also understand the nature of the awful illness. And that all helps me to, you know, get the forms done and to get them done in a good way.
I hope that there are groups out there in other parts of the world and other countries that have somebody like you in their ME support group, because that is an invaluable service. That absolutely is.
I also think, too, with regards to the care packages, there are so many people living on their own with no support whatsoever. And they are just existing. Their lives are horrendous. Maybe they don't have family support. And it is so necessary that those people receive support and that they are entitled to a full assessment of their care needs. And that is what I try to do for ME Support Northern Ireland.
That's absolutely fantastic. I'm sure everybody who makes use of the service is incredibly grateful. And folks, we'll probably have to wrap up this part of the conversation, because actually there's a lectern ready to be stood at, and mm-hmm, guests are arriving here. Antoinette, how can people get in touch with ME Support Northern Ireland, and what can ME Support Northern Ireland offer beyond what Anne's already told us? What would you like to say about your organisation?
What Anne actually does is, we need it for the group. Most people are bedbound, housebound, and form filling, as you say. You get these forms through the door. People don't know how to fill them in.
Mm-hmm.
They're too ill. You know, their cognitive, their memory, their concentration is all affected as well at the ME. So we're absolutely valued to, like, have Anne on board. We would take in telephone calls from sufferers, maybe not even the sufferer, the parents of the sufferer, or family member, wife, husband. So we give advice on managing their day-to-day. Emotional support, which is...
Massive,
absolutely massive. We do home visits.
What does a home visit entail? What would you do then?
It would entail, David and I, at the minute, we've been going to visit people, a particular person at the minute. We've done quite a lot of the wee home visit, where David sits with the younger person and I sit with the parent.
Oh, my goodness. And that's fantastic.
We never had that. So it's things that we would have maybe wanted 10, 12, 13 years ago to give us a wee bit of hope.
Absolutely.
So David has built up this really... the relationships with the younger ones, young support, like I'm talking from maybe around 18 upwards.
Fabulous. Husband,
and he's got a wee group of them on chat.
Amazing.
Which is absolutely fantastic for them.
I'm going to have to get this. I mean, this is the same David, listeners, that we were talking about earlier. And I met him, and he's a fabulous chap. And I met him whenever I was coming in today, dressed to the nines, because it's a special occasion. Or does he always dress to the nines? Because he's
a
snappy dresser, that guy.
He loves a shirt and tie.
He's dressed to the nines.
But what you were saying earlier, even with Anne, about pacing.
Mm.
David took Emmy so young that he's never known anything else. I think when you get it, when you're older, or you've been out working, it's detrimental, where you've to learn to pace.
Yes.
David's never known anything else from the age of 10, 11.
Yeah.
That's that interesting. Makes
it,
yes.
It's part of his life.
Yeah, it's part of his life. He doesn't have to learn it. He's never known anything else, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. That's fascinating.
Because there's times I would look at him and he goes, I need to go and lie down. And he goes.
Oh,
he knows.
That's fantastic discipline, isn't it? Mm. Or necessary, you know.
Yeah,
it's not really a choice, is it?
He's never known anything else, if that makes sense. Where if you're out working, and maybe take Emmy when you're 30, 40, you've had a life.
That's right.
And then having to learn to pace yourself is so, so hard.
That's a very interesting angle.
That would be so
angle.
Hard to do. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You know, I'm having a good day, I'm going to go and do this. No, David knows that he just paces throughout.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But I always feel sorry for people who are maybe were able to go to work, had a job, whatever, and they have to learn to pace. And I think it's a very, very hard thing to do.
Oh, I haven't managed it yet. I tell you for sure.
It's really impossible.
I think it's a very hard, it's a skill.
It is a skill, yes, but I guess then I hope it's one that can be learned over time.
Well,
and the more I kind of chat to folks like yourselves, the more, as I've said many times before, this show is you know, in many ways a very selfish action, because it's actually for me to meet people who have more experience or different experience than I do, and I can be like, that's interesting, I can learn from that, or I can utilize that, you know. And I think there's, you know, I understand from feedback, there's people across the entire world who feel the same. And, you know, that's why we have folks like yourselves on the show.
Yeah.
So, Emmy Support Northern Ireland, how can people get in touch?
Well, we're really happy the night they announced. We haven't given it out to our members yet. We're launching our website for May 12th. You will see a wee clip of it tonight on the
screen.
Thank you, Jan. it's hopefully going to be going live on the 12th, 13th of May. We decided to do this and use our resources and our energy, believe it or not, to do this instead of going out and doing a conference, because we think people need us as much as we need them, and we need to find the people who are suffering from ME.
Yes.
So for us to do another venue, like last year we done Stormont, we done Unrest, we showed Unrest last 12th of May,
mm-hmm.
and then the next day we stood in the City Hall in Belfast, which was exhausting for people who'd done the 2 days.
Yes, the 2 days.
And we decided this year we're going to use our resources, we're going to use what we have, and we're going to launch our website, and hopefully people will find us and we can support them as well, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And what's the address for the website? Do we know yet?
Yeah, I think we do.
You need to talk to David. Yeah,
we'll talk to David and I'll post that.
And David, well, it will be emesupportni.com. And I should have had it here, but it will
no
be
worries
here.
We can add that in. I'll get the if you want to scroll down while you're listening to this to the show notes, all the information, contact details for ME Support Northern Ireland, they'll be in the show notes for you to check out, links, and we'll continue to broadcast, and obviously as soon as that site goes live, You'll find it on my Twitter feed, and we'll be chucking it all over our little corner of the Twitterverse.
And just in case anybody's interested who's listening, to date we've raised over £20,000 for ME Research UK. We're about to donate another £1,000 tonight, which will coincide with the 12th of May as well. So that's our wee donation that we're putting out for ME Awareness Week.
That's absolutely
incredible. So we're well
incredible.
Over the 21,000 now. We're well over that mark.
That's brilliant. Incredible.
So, and we have Stuart here from ME Research UK to accept the cheque. So at the minute, he's having a wee bit of dinner. And he's coming in.
Well, we have a fantastic night planned.
Yeah.
You're in Belfast. And what amazing work your organisation is doing. ME Support Northern Ireland. I personally can't recommend it enough to anybody out there who's listening to this in Northern Ireland who is suffering on their own, feeling a bit lonely and isolated. Fabulous group of people. If you can't make it along to the support meetings, then there are clearly so many other ways that you can participate. They have a Facebook page. You can have, perhaps you might be lucky enough to have the well-dressed David drop by your house. Who knows?
Oh, he'll love you, Paddy.
Antoinette, Anne from ME Support Northern Ireland, thank you so much for inviting us here tonight. And we will definitely, I'm sure, have you guys on the show again.
Definitely. Yeah.
But for now, thank you very much.
No, thank you, Paddy, for having us.
Paddy, yeah.
Thank you.
And we're back. So obviously a massive thank you to Antoinette Christie and Anne Smith with a Y from ME Support Northern Ireland. That website again was amesupportni.com. Clearly they're a fantastic bunch of people doing a heck of a lot of work, and I only hope that they continue to thrive as they seemingly move into the next phase of their organization's growth and progression. They do some great work. Obviously also, you know, some very harrowing stories. I think some of the most touching stories I've heard yet in doing this show, whenever I was chatting to Anne and Antoinette, those are the ones that really stay with you. And you know, I gotta tell you though, hearing her heartbreaking stories about David, her son, and then meeting the fella on the day, it's pretty wonderful. She had a lot of really interesting stuff to say about how he doesn't know anything really different than living with ME. That's something that I it's interesting to wrap my head around. I can't really think about that because it's been such a life-changing thing for me that I've had to record a blooming podcast about it. So that tells you something, you know. So that's something to think about. In fact, talking about that, I put a couple of tweets out, but I'll say it here as well. I'm going to be recording a show in a few weeks about being a parent while having ME. So if you are a parent of a young child, or if you're a parent with ME and you'd like to come on and share some experience, then please do get in touch. Let me know. You can do that on Twitter. I didn't put my phone on silent again, did I? You can do that on Twitter at Zero All About Me. You can do it on email at it's really not all about me at gmail.com. And please, yeah, if you want to come on the show for any reason, open door policy, as we say every week, you're in a queue. So just, you know, if you want to come on now and share your experience of your own ME or the experience of loving and caring for somebody with ME, just get in touch. Those ways to get in touch are in the show notes below, as are the links to ME Support Northern Ireland. And I think that's about it for this week. I will talk to you again next Monday, next week, whenever I'll let you give you an update on the treadmill, and whether that has been a absolutely crazy idea and silly mistake. Or if I feel slightly better. It'll probably be somewhere in between, won't it? Knowing ME, and it might be all those things in one day, just at different times of the day. That's the illness. That's the acceptance. The acceptance is the inconsistency, isn't it? And that is such a very difficult thing to accept, as discussed in the chat earlier. Anyway, I will let you know how that goes. I hope that you guys have the best day that you can. Until next Monday, take care of yourselves and each other. Cheers.